All right, welcome back to the Year Right Podcast, episode 67. Today we are joined with Aria and Ethan. How are you guys?
Good.
Now, before we get into the podcast, we agreed that when it gets to like, what, 35 minutes, no matter what.
46?
34.
When it gets to 34 minutes, no matter who's talking, I don't even care if it's an emotional story, we're going to stop it right there. That's
perfect.
All right,
so let's...
A simple question we ask everybody on the podcast is, how's your week been, the start of the week? We'll start with you, Aria.
We're in pre-production, so it's been a little bit stressful, but okay. Yeah, it's been good. I got a car accident 2 days ago, so
I'm so sorry to
but no injuries, no nothing, so it's okay. But I actually had to reschedule my music video for it because the car was going to be used for it, so a little bit stressful, but it is what it is.
Was the car totaled?
No. It's getting fixed, so it's okay. It's rescheduled for the 26th.
That's funny, because my friend got into a car accident 2 days ago. I wonder if they're the one that hit you.
Oh my God. I don't think it would have been. It was like an old woman.
Okay. That's good then. Hope she's okay.
She's fine. Her car was like absolutely fine. It was our car that was like not great.
Whose fault was it?
No comment.
Okay.
No comment.
Was it during
traffic?
It wasn't
my fault. That's all I know. Yeah.
All right. How about you, Ethan?
I'm very good, thank you. I have not been in a car crash.
All right.
That's good to hear. Thank you. Pretty good. Just came out of production for another one called Lily of the Valley, directed by Zion McClain. Really, really amazing production and amazing crew.
Okay.
Otherwise, getting back into the pre-production for our current and upcoming film that we're filming called The Straight.
Yeah, I want to hear about it. Tell us. Tell us what you can, you know what I mean? Because obviously there's got to be secrets, right?
Do I have to look at the contract again?
No, there's a contract?
You're
damn.
You're the owner of the rights.
So, The Straight is set in a post-apocalyptic world. No year given or no place to leave much more freedom for the viewer to decide. And it's up to interpretation, where humanity has fallen in a previous part. In the past, there were, let's just say there were machines that govern humanity and was ascending them to greatness. Let's just say it that way. And so now set to like everything's fallen apart. We don't know what's happened because it's not the main focus of the film. There's a group, like a fanatical group, called the Subjugates, which it's like our post-apocalyptic equivalent of the Crusaders, because that was a massive inspiration between the writer and I, well, writing the script and the faction as a whole. And they are to continue, they want to bring back those the ways of the old ways, you know, like they feel as like we were so close to greatness, but we didn't reach it. And so bringing that back is their way of, that's their ideology of survival, is bring it back because we were getting there for greatness and we will survive, we will prevail. And they are pretty much invading this camp. It's like the equivalent of like the, you guys seen Platoon with Charlie Sheen, Johnny Depp,
Willem Dafoe?
Camera people are nodding. I've heard of it. Charlie Sheen and who?
I know who Charlie Sheen is.
Charlie Sheen and Willem Dafoe and Johnny Depp, like when he was quite young.
Seems like such a interesting trio for a film.
It's a Vietnam War film. It's directed by Oliver Stone. I believe it's Oliver Stone, I think. A little bit of an incorrection if I said it. Where it was based on his experiences. So the film was what he saw and what he felt. And there was a particular scene in it where like they went to the Vietnamese camp, and it's just like how the American soldiers saw themselves above them. And so we took that inspiration of like in a post-apocalyptic world, surviving, and the subjugates believe themselves to be the top. And because they see themselves at the top, they are the solution to overcome the harshness and the cruelness of this world. And let's just say it doesn't go quite well for the villagers. But the story is centered on a new recruit called Novik. He is called that because we don't know his name. And Novik means newcomer in Russian, because we're taking quite a bit of inspiration from different cultures and different languages and how they could fit either phonetically and especially like if they sound really cool, because that's what matters.
Yeah.
And it's about his inner conflict and inner turmoil throughout his journey from the start of the film to the end. Can't reveal too much what happens in it, but I'm willing to talk about it because it's such an incredible process and journey to write with us with my mate who Max. He and I wrote this together because we went to like film school together.
Which film school?
SAE.
What's that?
Parnell. SA Institute in Parnell.
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't heard of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they do film, music, and audio. Mm.
Okay. I went to South Seas.
Ah.
Whatever. I think there's a small the
oppositions.
One.
Yes. It's kind of, it feels like that. It is the opposition.
I think it is low-key, yeah.
Oh, my bad. I got one question, yes. And I don't know if you're allowed to answer this. I want to know what's like your budget, if you had a budget. I'm always interested in these questions. I'm going to hit you with some questions you might not be able to answer.
I love it because it's such a hard-hitting one, and that's one we've been talking about for quite a bit.
Because it seems like such a big story that you need a big budget for.
Yes, indeed. Would you like to answer this one? Because it's very embarrassing for my part.
I mean, technically we have 3,000 right now. Yes. So right now we have 3,000. And that's with like almost no promotion for the our crowdfunding or I'll give a little. So
that's pretty decent.
Pretty good, yeah. And we've locked in our location for 1.5K. Mm-hmm. So everything else after that is kind of art department catering and transport, etc. Yeah, yeah. Everybody that's working on it is like willing to work on it unpaid, etc., and just kind of have a royalties arrangement. And
wish my crew or my crew could do it for free.
Well, I think that'll probably end after this film because it's our graduate film, so it's a lot of the people that are in it have kind of worked with us prior in other films as well. I know Tony's playing Novik, he's been on this podcast before.
So you're in it too.
No, Ethan's.
Wait,
not
Tony's
there.
Who?
Tony.
Yeah.
Tony.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
He texted me actually an hour ago saying, yo, I heard you got Ira and Ethan on the podcast tonight. Yeah. You guys read a table read today?
Yeah, we literally that's what he, just
that's,
came
is that,
from...
That's what it was for?
Yes.
Yeah.
So how did that go?
It went really well. Sadly, we couldn't have everyone with us, but we had some good fill-ins for those roles. But seeing them in action, other than like the auditions, because when we had them for auditioning, it was like an earlier version of the script, which I don't like to talk about with that.
Completely different how, version. Different.
How is Ethan like in terms of like his character?
Tony's.
Oh, Tony. Tony, you're Ethan. Yeah, Tony.
I guess I'm Tony now. I have to change it for the thumbnail. Sorry, Tony. I'm calling your name now. Tony. When he did the audition, we made him quite a quiet character at first, but now he has a bit more speaking role, which is much more of a leading role for him.
Yeah.
When he did it, he has such a good... He showed the weaknesses in Novik really well. Like, mm-hmm. Novik is a young person.
Mm.
And he too, himself, has been through the same harshness as everyone else has in this world as well. Scavenging, starving, maybe not the toxic waste because it's not Fallout. And capturing that weakness... that vulnerability, and that's what captivated me when I saw him in his audition, is that he looks not necessarily like fresh, but he just looks so fragile.
Yeah.
And especially the world that we're throwing Tony in, and the role he's going to play, and the story that his character is going to go through, he's the perfect person to do it. He really captivated me when he did this audition.
I'm really glad you're saying this because he's going to be playing a villain in a movie that I'm releasing next year in November at Rialto Cinemas.
Oh.
So I'm glad to hear this good stuff about him.
Nah, he's phenomenal.
I mean, he was very receptive of the story itself as well, and he was really like willing to have his own opinion on things. And Ethan works really well under that kind of dynamic. So, yeah.
I like to get sort of like I won't say the ground level, like, you know, like I'm not better than the actors or anything, but I love to go on their level kind of thing and talk with them as if like, I'm not an actor, but like if I was an actor thinking like, okay, what can we do to make this feel more like yourself? That means if, for example, there was a line in it today that I wasn't too sure of, but I love for Tony to throw a little bit of something that's a bit personal of himself a little, not too revealing or anything, but that means when he delivers that line, it hits him personally and it hits those key emotions in that scene, in that moment. And I love working with actors because I originally wanted to be an actor before I wanted to be behind camera.
Yeah.
And so I guess it's just like me originally wanting to be an actor and what I've learned from acting and all that, it allows me to connect to actors on that level and able to have that language barrier, not have a language barrier between us.
Exactly.
100%.
What's been like the timeline from having the idea?
That's crazy. That's a loaded question.
To like where you're at right now. Like the moment where you're like, this is a good idea. Let's
Should
do this.
Should we start this with your whole lore?
Oh, no.
The whole franchise.
Oh, no. I don't.
The whole lore. You got a lore.
He's got a whole document that's like the
Bible of the whole world.
Is this just based on this one story?
No. So, I won't say the concept of the story itself, but the concept of the world was actually made like about 3 years ago. And made like a short film called Remnants, and it was like a very early version of it. It still had early concepts of it.
It was like our first year of film school.
Yeah, yeah. It was like the last project of that year as well. And I just made it for fun because I was put into like a group of like my lecturer at the time, because we were mixed with like audio, music, and film.
Mm-hmm.
And the lecturers intentionally put like, oh, let's put all the metalheads together because I love heavy metal. And our main goal was like, let's make a movie with a heavy metal soundtrack and make it really fun, like equivalent of like Doom, you know, like like Mike Gordon and all that.
And it worked well?
Yes.
A little bit of a stutter.
It was actually the first time I properly directed in a long time because when I was a bit younger, when I wanted to go into acting, I did my own films with like, you know, my mates and all that, you know, you do as aspiring filmmaker. Yeah. And so I would direct my own films because it was only like three of us that made our films, and they're really terrible, by the way. And it was like an incident where it stopped me directing for like a decade.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm 30 or anything. and so, yeah, when I did Remnants, it was like the first time properly being back in that directing seat.
Mm-hmm.
And working within the time restraints that we had for our course, and managed to make what we accomplished. And I still watch it every now and then as like a, wow, this is how far I've come kind of thing.
This is where I started.
Yeah,
I mean, there was even The Zone, right?
Yeah, but
which was kind of a precursor to
We made it like a film that was inspired by, like, I don't know if you guys know the film Andrei Tarkovsky's Stalker.
No,
I've heard of it before. It's on my watch list. I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't heard of it.
It's like the, what was it like? It's a 2 hour.
I don't know. I've seen it like 300 times though because of you.
Beautiful film. One of the like most beautiful films I've seen. Like for a Soviet film, it's not that it's a bad thing, but it's just a brilliant film. I feel like me trying to describe it is like not going to give it justice.
Yeah.
So like going in with like not knowing what's going to happen, and just you can even like.
Can't even put the words in. You just know it's...
Yeah, just take a substance, just relax to it. It's like...
That's cool.
What's it called? Stalker?
The Stalker.
Who directed it?
Andrei Tarkovsky. He's behind Solaris. Okay, that's really embarrassing. I just forgot the others.
I haven't heard of those names before.
He's a bit of an older...
He's very old. Like,
Is this a recent movie? Or
This is like very 79. Old. And it's like in Russian.
Yeah, it's all Russian. Yeah. He was like...
And you said you've heard of it and you put it on your watch
list? It's on my watch list.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I've...
You just don't seem like the guy that's going to watch it.
No, I've watched old films. There's The Pianist. That's a good one. That's like set in World War II.
A movie in the 70s in Russian? You've heard of it?
My mate's Russian, bro. He tells me to watch weird films all the time.
It is a weird film.
Yeah. I guess you could say that Andrei Tarkovsky is like the competitor against Stanley Kubrick. Because they... If you look side by side like of their like the films, I want to say the... Similar, like, you know, you had 2001 Space Odyssey, and Andrei Tarkovsky hated the film because they had no story.
Okay.
And he's like, I'm going to make my own. And he made his own, which is a phenomenal story about loss and grief.
Shit.
Where Space Odyssey is about monkey men and an AI going You're nuts and a giant baby.
So many people.
Great film.
I like the sound of that, actually.
Yeah.
So your film that's coming out, what's your kind of... aimed runtime? What are you kind of aiming for? 80 minutes, 90 minutes?
Oh,
it's a short film.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a short film. We're not allowed to do more than short.
If it's 40 minutes, it's considered feature, right?
I think so. I think it's 40 minutes.
So it's going to be under 40.
It's looking a bit like 15 minutes.
I think it's going to be somewhere between 15 to 20 minutes, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's some very intricate cuts, very precise, and where some points on dialogue or action where I want specifically captured, which is like my little inner.
Yeah.
Andrei Tarkovsky and Sergio Leone, who is the director behind The Good, Bad, and the Ugly, Fistful of Dollars, Once Upon a Time in the West, A Few Dollars More, Once Upon a Time in America. I can name all his films, but I'm not going to do that.
You've got really extensive film knowledge. You know a lot about films.
Don't get me into Akira Kurosawa.
Into what?
Akira Kurosawa. He directed Rashomon and... oh no, I forgot his other film.
You know all the films.
He knows so many that he's just like got so much to get through.
Aria, could I ask, like, can I talk about your part?
Yeah,
in
sure.
The project?
So I'm producing and assistant directing somewhat. Mm-hmm. I have another assistant director who's going to come on and sort of help on some days.
Mm-hmm.
But I also have a co-producer, Sativa Rogers. So she's also going to, we're just working together on everything. But I guess, a good way to sort of introduce myself is I've worked alongside Ethan as like his producer and assistant director for, I would say, the last year and a half at least.
Is this like a pretty good director producer duo?
I don't think that I would probably work with another director unless he didn't like the content that I was offering him or vice versa kind of thing. Yeah. You know what I mean? but yeah, so it's a good little dynamic. I think we just bounce off very well and like
bounce off the ideas.
Yeah, and we have a very like mutual respect for each other's creative contribution and like responsibility. I just handle a lot of the casting and the location booking and the contracts and the emails and the Facebook groups.
Can I ask about producing? Because I tried producing in film school itself. So I was doing like documentary directing, and for one of them I was being a producer. It is difficult being a producer, because I'm really good at talking to people now, especially like with my job that I do and this podcast. I'm just so confident, but back then I was so what's the process? If I was to give you a scenario, you've got an idea for a short film that's set in like a warehouse. What's like, how do you go about it as a producer to get that sorted?
Well, I would just start talking to people that I think would be interested in being a part of the crew and sort of, you know, pitching the idea and then looking at potential locations and sort of what that's going to cost and then where we're going to get those funds from, etc. Obviously, there's a lot of variables because, you know, it depends. There might already be some people part of the idea. There might not. Mm-hmm. There already might be a location that's kind of like, hey, we've got this, or it might take like a couple weeks to find one. But I just kind of flesh out, I guess, just every single little aspect that needs to be done. And I just prioritize everything that needs to be done sort of, you know, before other things. And sort of, I eye out what I can probably get sorted a little bit faster than other things. And then I'll spend a little bit more time trying to sort out the harder things than the easier things and that kind of thing. Yeah.
Okay. And how about, is location scouting take a while? Do you really, really go into the location scouting?
Yeah, we do every time. Yeah, every single time. Yes. Sometimes we'll just do like 3-4 location scouts of different places because the first one's not... This guy is very pedantic about what he wants.
Like, you need to be specific.
I deal with a lot of like art department stuff.
Yeah.
So scenery and props and costumes have to be quite eccentric to like the vision, and I'm like that with anyone that I work with. Like, I have to make, you know, not make sure, but like it's even like much more pedantic obviously with your own vision, you know. It just has to match with the kind of world, you know. It's like no jungle look, it has to be very pine forest look to it.
And sometimes my job is trying to bring it all back in and kind of go, okay, these are the resources that we have and are available, and we might need to adapt a little bit. And,
What's the furthest you've ever gone for a shoot before? Like,
probably
distance-wise?
I can answer that one.
That's going to be Sam Rickwood's.
No, mine's further.
Really?
Yeah. All the way down, for like a short film or?
Just anything really.
Any project really. Yeah.
I went down for commercial down at Gore. It's probably the furthest I've gone.
Oh, yeah. I love Gore, bro. I fucking love it down there. There's nothing, but I love it.
Yeah. We did like an entire like commercial down there with like everyone, like the entire town, and it was like for neighborhood support, I believe that's what they're called. Yeah.
Did you get the big bass in the background?
We didn't do that for any filming, but we did take photos and all that, which is that's cool. Really that's nice. Cool.
Have you shot in Canterbury at all before?
No.
Is that because I got invited to a film premiere about a month or two ago. Have you heard of The Bookworm?
Yes, I have.
I watched it and all filmed in Canterbury, and it made me so confident that I need to do so. I'm going to go to Canterbury next year to film a movie there because it just looks so beautiful.
It does. It is. It does. It is, yeah.
Canterbury's crushed, like ground crushed. Yeah. Cherries.
Yeah.
Just hope it doesn't fall into the ocean at some point.
Milford Sounds.
Anyway, what?
Milford Sounds. I hope it doesn't fall into the ocean or something.
Oh my goodness.
Earthquakes and all that.
I see.
Yeah. Then I don't move on from
that. When's the... Where will this project go? Festivals? YouTube?
So, until we have a solidified film festival plan, we won't be releasing it probably anywhere until we sort of know the restrictions around what we can and can't do, because obviously some festivals are like, you can't have any public sort of presence of the film or like anything, and then some are fine. So we've kind of got to wrap up and go through all of that.
So you probably think maybe not this year, but next year?
No, definitely not this year. What we have to do is we have to basically create like a assessment draft to submit to our school that will be like accessible, and then we're going to continue into post-production till like midway next year kind of thing, and then so
this is a real good passion project then for 15 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, when did you first start writing the script?
I thought they were asking me the question.
Yeah, I know.
I'm interested though. I want to know this. Yeah.
My mate and I, Max and I, we started writing. We came up with like three other different stories at first. We accidentally wrote a full feature length version of a different story, and then
I mean, why not one day?
One day. Franchise. It's a very different. No. it was a very different story, of course. And then we did another one, and. Oh, it just could not work out. But, sorry, to answer your question, yeah, we started writing this around, actually, earlier this year, because the idea came to me at a very random time. Like, it was the first scene where, like, the main character's sitting alone, and, like, the subject is all surrounding him, like, it's a camp.
Mm.
And it was just that, the vision of that scenery surrounding me.
Yeah.
I hung in the bush one day, and I just visualized it around me, and I felt the emotions of, like, confinement, lonely, like feeling so lonely.
Did you go through like many drafts?
Yes, we went through so many drafts. I cannot count how many drafts have been, but being through quite a lot.
Probably about 10 at least.
I'll say more than that.
Yeah, at least.
I'll say more than shit.
Yeah.
I think the most I've gone through in a project is eight drafts. I thought that was heaps.
That's
bad. Every week it's like, we got a new version, and I'm like
new idea. I'm
gonna mark it all over again.
idea.
When you guys have finished filming and you start getting into post-production, how long would you say it takes you guys in total, including like all audio cuts and doing After Effects and cutting it all together, how long would you say it takes you in total to edit everything in post-production?
I mean, we're not given a lot of time. So with most of our projects that we have done like internally within our school, we only really get like 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
So it's not like an independent, is it? Because you've got, you've got like a time limit, right? Or like a...
Yeah, so our courses run for about 6 weeks.
12 weeks typically.
No. Our course we're doing now is 12 weeks, but our previous ones.
Ah, right.
Yeah. So our courses generally are about 6 weeks, and then you spend about, 3 weeks in pre-production, a week filming, and then 2 to 3 weeks in post kind of thing, but it always depends. So, yeah.
That's long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it does somewhat impact, like, writing, I found. Like, I like to be quite adaptable in the writing process as well. Mm. Even, like, simple as, like, looking locations or even, like... Because we went through different versions of like the script, we're like thinking, okay, I don't want to do anything After Effects related, so let's remove any gunshot related instances, or we can shot in a way where I wouldn't say it's like implied, but like you could see it. Like for example, you might have a frame and the gun might be down here, and you just get the sound and the character body shutting. Yeah. Like it's like getting away with those and still. It's like focusing on the emotions of the characters, more like the surprises, like, oh, like that, you know. Okay. That's much more important than necessarily seeing the action happening. It's the emotion that's pushing the character into, like, oh my gosh.
Gotcha. Yeah. So when do you struggle with kind of, I don't know, whenever I've like written things before, which isn't much, it's like 2 times, but I struggle to like kind of fit it in a time constraint. You guys said it's going to be about 15 minutes. Do you guys struggle with trying to collapse it or the story into a 15 minute kind of cut?
Do you want me to answer that?
Yeah, you can if you want to.
Yeah. With the writing process, like, yeah, we do keep that in mind and we do follow the, like, I guess you could say the street rule of writing of like a page, it equal is like an equivalent of a minute of a film. Mm. So we like run off of that. So it's like that in mind. I mean, what I tend to do personally, and I have done it with this film as well, like the story is I just write however long I want, because it's much more easier to remove things than necessarily add. So yeah, I just don't, yeah. I don't think about the restraints too much until I feel right. I'm happy. I've got the story from start to finish. Now let's start removing things that not necessarily, or may, there may be as filler or whatever. I just find it that way around, because then you're not worrying about that, because if you think about that stuff, it starts limiting.
Yeah, yeah.
I personally found. So I try to get try and annihilate anything that can cause me limitation.
Yeah, to get rid of the limitation, and then when it actually comes to post-production, you can kind of say, oh, we don't need this and this, right?
Well, that's when you can't, I guess, like, for me, that's why it's like so many drafts, because then it's just like getting rid of so many like different things to shorten it down. And I guess it also helps with like visualizing shots as well in your head as well. Mm-hmm. They can visualize how like the duration of each shot is or how it might cut, and it impacts how the story might tell. Because we did a version of like where it's much more story influence is like written more like a novel, until I worked with my DOP on doing the shot list, and that actually how it's cut and how we visualized it, it actually changed the story quite a bit, and it actually shortened it down. Similar thing we did with like nearly this newer version, same thing, we shortened some things down or got rid of some things, and it just made the story flow nicer. Like for in terms of like for a film, not for like a novel, for instance.
Interesting.
Yeah.
When you guys are shooting as well, do you find that like different camera angles can sometimes portray different emotions?
Oh yeah,
100%.
Would you say that you've used? How would I put this? Would you say that you've kind of used that technique in this new upcoming short film?
Oh, Julian would answer this question well.
Would. DOP would answer this quite well. I can say that probably actually a good thing to mention is that Sergio Leone's like how he directs his shots is that from what I get and feel is that let me word this really well. Okay, actually here's a better example. So when you have like, for example, you might have a conversation between two characters, right? Mm. And you want to show that the character is, let's just say one of the characters is starting to get a bit angry in the scene, right? And so the best way to portray that, even through the camera itself, is that you could even have a low angle. So you set the camera a bit lower and you make them look taller, imposing. Mm. Because they look imposing. They look like they're empowering. And because, gotcha. You know, when you're scared of something, things look bigger, I guess.
Yeah. You're more intimidated, so things look like they might be the same size as you, but they might look a bit stronger or something like that, right?
When I shoot like scenes that are really intense, which is like something I did on Sunday, if there's like an intense scene, I don't like to use the tripod. I like to have it handheld, little bit, like not shaky, but you can tell it's not on a tripod.
Yeah.
Is that kind of something that you could relate to?
We do a lot of handheld, but and then we'll do tripods and stuff.
Do you prefer handheld or tripod? Because me personally, I just enjoy, like if it's a calm, quiet shot, maybe establishing shot or something, tripod.
Yeah.
Really, really enjoy like handheld.
Again, I just think it just depends.
I'll say it heavily depends on the emotion of the scene.
Yeah.
I mean, context and all that, but it does, because if you're angry, things will shake up. You know, when you see someone like, I don't know, like an angry person walking through a corridor and you're filming from like front of them, mm-hmm. yeah, the camera's going to move a bit more rapidly because that's how the person is moving. It's body movement. Mm. And yeah, if you're having a bit, everything's slower, maybe, I won't say happy, but maybe sad, yeah, everything will move a bit more slower. It's like expressing the emotions through the camera. The camera is reflecting those emotions. How it's helped going the audience feel in that scene, feel the characters and such.
Okay. I like that. I like that. So this was obviously, this isn't going to be ready for a while, but my, I had a question was what summit you're going to plan next, but you're probably not even thinking of that, right? Oh, you are? Someone's, well, I heard the word franchise somewhere.
I mean, I've pitched the idea of continuing it on next year, but it's really up to him and whether he wants to do it. But me and Sativa, we're starting a production company ourselves, so we're just going to kind of continue to do our thing. We really want to go into music videos more so, mm-hmm. but we do also want to continue doing short films when something kind of comes and we enjoy the script, or if Ethan has a script to do with this kind of world, we'd love to.
I mean, why not make it a feature?
Yeah,
exactly. And also, again, I love working with him. So
it's a lot of people, I guess, our mates, and it's starting to grow to like
our lecturer. Yeah, our lecturer even is like, you know, that if you want to, you know, make it or whatever, stick together as a group after you leave school. Yeah. And
it's just a lot of people see potential in it, even like from the original short film. And I made other bunch of films set within that world as well.
Yeah, we made a short film called The Fragments as well, which was
set in that world.
Loosely, that world.
I'm going to shake your hand because I love that. Because I've made my own little universe. Oh. I've got 12 films and it's just so fun making more movies kind of set in that world. You know what I mean?
He sometimes gets a little like, oh, I'm over it. And then I'm like, just take a break. No, but then you go into the lore,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like you just, because for me personally, I'm up to my 13th film that's set in my world. Ooh. And I can't imagine myself directing something that's not in that world. Mm. You just want to keep building on it. Yeah. Is that kind of what you're feeling right now?
For me is, I'll say like for the original, short film made, like mm-hmm. my first year, everyone was talking about it. Everyone was wanting another one, and it got to a point where I guess because that's when I was like going back into directing, like I want to do something else, I don't want to just rely on it, and it was just like a fun project.
Mm.
And then yeah, and I guess just for now I just didn't want to admit or sound like a bit of like a you know, like someone like, oh yeah, it's a franchise, oh yeah, blah blah blah, you know. Maybe it's just being too nice of me, I don't know.
He's a very modest guy. Mm. He's a very humble guy.
I don't know about that.
He doesn't take compliments very well.
No. Take criticisms and you've got something to...
Yeah, he takes a lot of criticism.
Yeah, always improve on criticism, right? Yeah,
absolutely. I love criticisms. Cause just get better kind of thing.
What was one of your main inspirations in getting into filmmaking?
Oh!
Another loaded question.
It is a very loaded question.
I'm going to have to cut you off there because it's 34 minutes. No, go there. Answer this. I need to hear this.
Like I mentioned before, it was originally like acting. Like I grew up with a lot of film because I'm autistic. So I struggle with human, like pretty much like talking to people and all that, which is...
Reading human emotions and things.
Absolutely. Let me shake your hand again.
I am also autistic.
Yes.
So I understand kind of what you mean by that.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much.
I don't want to end it. I want to ask you, can you talk about that?
The autism poem.
How that's kind of like, how's it helped you as a filmmaker maybe?
I would say, and I'm going to bring up my writer again. He pointed this out really well, and I'm probably not going to replicate his words very well. I should have wrote it down, actually. Should have been on a plaque or something.
Get it framed.
I guess like seeing like films and all that, and seeing the majority of like the diversity of the films I've seen, it allows me to... Because with film, right, you can see emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And so it taught me, like, that's what sadness looks like. Because I struggled... Because when I was young, I struggled not just reading emotions, I struggled with expressing emotions and mm-hmm. what to react to. Like, I'll just get angry at everything because I don't understand...
emotions.
Yeah, what does it mean? Why am I feeling this way?
Sorry, my nephew is, eight, and he's going for a very similar thing at this age. He's having big meltdowns just because sometimes he doesn't know how to react to things or when he's yelled at because he's been told not to do something four times,
yeah.
he'll then have a massive breakdown. So it is a struggle. It's a huge thing as well that a lot of people are undiagnosed with autism as well, and they just kind of don't realize it.
Yeah.
I had a friend who didn't get diagnosed until she was 23. Yeah. Shit. And she had so many issues her whole childhood and teenager kind of period.
Makes it all make sense once it's kind of like,
she was kind of like, oh my god, I know now why like these things have been happening, or I've been like feeling this type of way. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it is nuts. Like, I can't imagine, I guess, where I'll be now or who I am now. Like, I'm gonna probably give massive props to my mother. She raised me as a single mother. Like, imagine like a single mother trying to teach their kid the most basic thing that anyone can grow up, you know, like grow with, and that's like the basics of human emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So like teaching, like, no, you feel sad from this, and let me tell you a story. I hope this is okay. I can tell
let's
you.
Hear it. Let's hear it. Let's hear it.
So I think I was at the age of, let's just say unknown age, because I don't know when exactly it happened, and I don't quite remember this, but it was like my mom tried to taught me like emotions and all this stuff for years and years. And so we were like going out for a walk, and there was a part where I stopped, and she realized like, oh, you know, why did you stop? And I looked down, and she saw me looking down. It was like a dead mouse, gross and everything, I guess. And I don't know why, like, so captivated by this, but she was wondering like why. And I just told her like the most simplest thing, like, Mom, I feel sad. That's like, yeah, expressing that, like, and I don't know why I visualize this, but it's like a movie, like.
I get that.
Because she cried.
I can feel that.
And, like, felt like she achieved what a lot of, like, parents, because she went to, like, talks and all that. This was, like, what, like, the early 2000s? So people had very different perspectives of disability.
And, like, diversity and Asperger's and
parents. Especially, yes. I feel, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, they were, most of the parents, like, she went to the talks with, like, all crying and saying, oh, poor me, poor child. She had a very like different attitude. She's like, nah, if you're crying about this, I'm gonna do this my own thing. She's like Mars Morales of like 2000. She's like, nah, I'm gonna do my own thing, and just did that.
What a way to
yeah, you go, Mom. Thank you.
That's awesome. Yeah, we've reached almost 40 minutes. This has been a really good conversation.
Yeah.
Before we end off, can you just tell us like where we can find you guys?
I live down the road.
Oh,
he does.
What's
actually
the address? Yeah, what's the address then?
Oh,
house party?
Give it to you.
Do you have to blurt this out?
Nope. We just put it in.
I live in the box.
Yeah. No, but your social media is in, you know, how we can find you.
Mine is at No, This Is Ethan Barrett, a reference to Patrick from SpongeBob, by the way, on Instagram, and you can just find me on Facebook as Ethan Barrow.
Okay.
I look the same. Then we have a beard. Actually, no, I think I have a beard.
I think you do, yeah. You've got the glasses, you got the suit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Medical reasons, actually.
Awesome. Yes. And Aria?
You can find me at Aria the Aries, and also you can find our little film group collective at MIW Studios and my production company at Stormix Studio.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on.
Thank you for having us.
No, thank you.